This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen, and with me are...
Devinder Hardwar.
And Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. It is Sunday morning, December 23rd, 7:15 a.m. as we're recording.
The perfect time to review movies.
Perfect time to record. You know, Jeff just got up. He sounds sick. Jeff, yeah, how are you doing today?
I'm a little under the weather. But you know what? Nothing's going to stop us.
Woo! Yeah!
Yeah! I can't woo that loud because there's still people sleeping.
I can't woo that loud. Well, anyway, we are here on the podcast today to just review Aquaman before the break begins. And this is going to be the last episode we are going to record in the year 2018. And before we wrap up the year, I just want to say it's been a pleasure to... both the listeners and also to you guys. It's been a wild and crazy year full of pretty awesome movies and some pretty rough developments in the field of not movies.
Let's just say, yeah, movies have been like the one constant good this year.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Thank you for movies.
That's right. Well, thanks for movies.
Devendra also had a child this year, so congratulations to
Devendra. Yeah,
movies are still pretty good, though. Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm right there with you. Hey, you wonder why I'm sick. It's my,
exactly.
my children
exactly.
are poisoning me.
Mm. Every winter, it's always like when I go to family parties and stuff, it's always the kids who get you sick. Yeah. So
yeah, some pretty major life accomplishments this year. Devendra had a child. I got married. Jeff, did you have a child this year, or was that last year?
I had a child this year. Yeah.
Also this year. Oh, yeah.
Also this year.
It doesn't seem like you got married this year, Dave. It feels like
it was at the beginning.
I remember you had your child like right after Infinity War or something like that. Was that, am I remembering
that?
Yeah,
right? It was the day I saw Infinity War. We had my child the day I saw it.
Yeah.
We should say though that we will be doing our top movies of the year episode, which is not recording it. Calendar year 2018, so that will be the next episode. So fear not, listeners, if you're worried about why wouldn't they do a top movies of the year episode?
Yeah, everyone's always looking forward to that one. Yeah. Generally, people who have left the Slash Filmcast will come back just for that episode. So looking forward to entertaining you for that one episode next week on the podcast.
But it's a weird year. I don't remember. Most years feel like they go by so quickly, and
this year
so
has
long?
Not.
I don't understand.
Yeah, Solo, you know, feels like it came out 16 years ago. I can't believe the Ready Player One wars were fought this year over how good that movie was.
Yeah,
really would like to forget about that actually. But anyway. Just wanted to thank you for this year. Hope you all have a happy holiday, whatever you're celebrating this year. And thank you for sticking with us, keeping your Slash Filmcast podcast tuned in on your podcast app throughout the year. You're all awesome. Next week's going to be our top 10 of 2018, top 10 films of 2018. You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. You can also email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. But today, we're not going to be doing any emails, any what we've been watching. We're just going to dive into a movie that demands our fullest attention today.
He said dive.
That's right. That is James Wan's Aquaman.
So dive is what you do to water. See?
Thanks, Jeff.
My father was a lighthouse keeper. My mother was a queen, but life has a way of bringing people together.
We could unite our worlds one day.
Check it out. Arthur is talking to the fish.
Oh,
person to come aboard.
That was from the trailer for Aquaman. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. Arthur Curry learns that he is the heir to the underwater kingdom of Atlantis and must step forward to lead his people and be a hero to the world. So Jeff Cannata, you know, we've talked about superhero films on the podcast in the past.
Yeah, we have.
And generally, my recollection, which may not be perfect, is that you are a fan of Marvel superhero films. Of course, Aquaman, for those who don't know, is the latest entry in the DCEU, DC Extended Universe, of films, which includes movies such as Batman v Superman, Wonder Woman, a whole different universe of characters. And with the exception of Wonder Woman, they've generally been pretty bad. My question for you is, does Aquaman break out of that trend of terrible DCEU movies to become something that's actually enjoyable?
Well, Dave, I guess I could answer that question in the form of a limerick.
Could you?
I find it absolutely surreal. A character with so little appeal. Yes, his film is wetter, but it's also much better than BVS and the Man of Steel.
Okay. That's pretty good, Jeff.
It's pretty good.
Thank you. You didn't even know you were setting me up that well.
I mean, so I will say that's true. I didn't know that. Somebody in the Slack Filmcast chat room was saying, like, was asking the question, does Dave ever like any of Jeff's limericks? And the answer is sometimes when they're
Dave
good.
Dave doesn't ever like anything Jeff does. So.
When they're good, I like the limericks. That was a good one. That was a pretty good one, Jeff.
Thank you. Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I had a great time. And yes, I have said many times, Marvel Zombie from way back. Yes, I love Marvel movies generally, and particularly many of them a lot. But that doesn't mean I have it out for DC in any way. I love DC characters. I'm a huge Superman and Batman fan. Never particularly had any love for Aquaman because, okay, Aquaman, you know, it's not really. Right. Who cares? But I've always rooted for the DC movies, and I've always been disappointed when they've come up short for me because I want them to be great. I want the DC universe to be just as fun as the Marvel universe. It just hasn't been, with the exception of Wonder Woman. This movie is fun with a character I really didn't have much of attachment to.
Can we talk about that for a second, Jeff? Like a character I really didn't have that much attachment to, and like, I mean, Aquaman. It's easy to forget that not that long ago, Aquaman was widely considered to be a laughingstock of the comic book universe. Like, I remember whenever Aquaman was brought up in popular culture, or like, you know, Robot Chicken or something like that. You know,
running joke for a decade. Yeah,
running joke that character's special ability was that he could talk to fish, and he wore a fairly silly looking gold outfit, right?
And you know, the joke was always like, hey guys, are we fighting? Can we go to the water for a second? Because I'm really good in the water. Can we just kind of move this into the water? You know, the jokes write themselves, right? It's not a character that inspires a lot of fan love. But to DC Comics credit, they, not too long ago, it's only been a few years now, they really rebooted. Geoff Johns came on and they rebooted the character and kind of made him awesome. So he's been awesome.
They made him certainly more aspirational. Like he is someone that you can actually see wanting to be or wanting to like get involved in your situation and help you out if you're in a jam. Whereas before that was inconceivable. Mm-hmm. So
they doubled down on his King of Atlantis status, I think, and they kind of like went into that lore, which the movie does as well.
Yeah,
and then I think the characterization that Jason Momoa embodied in the Justice League movie was even different than the comic. Like he's irreverent, he's kind of a bro, but in a fun way. Like in that movie, he was kind of fun, right? He was almost the comic relief a lot of ways, alongside the Flash. So it's an interesting take that I wasn't sure was going to work as its own movie. But this movie at 2.5 hours long, I saw that and I was like, we need an Aquaman movie that's 2.5 hours
it's an
long.
It's an epic, okay?
It is. I had so much fun with this movie. Yes, it could have been a little shorter, but I had a great time. visually inventive. It creates a wonderful mythology for the undersea and a look and feel for the undersea people and fights and how that all works.
I'm going to put this out there, Jeff, that this movie is the best proof that Avatar has had cultural impact. like the underworld land looks almost exactly like Pandora, except underwater, pretty much, in my opinion.
We all hear that the next Avatar movie is going to be primarily underwater, and I was like, I hope this doesn't eat that movie's lunch. I suspect that James Cameron will have some new ideas, but I loved the look of this movie. I loved – I think James Wan's action direction is awesome. There are some sequences in this that are so fun and so cool, and the way they're shot is so rad. Way better than anything you get in a Superman movie. And the fact that we have an Aquaman movie that's better than two Superman movies that we got that were directed by Zack freaking Snyder, that's crazy to me. It's fun. It has heart. It has it doesn't take itself too seriously. Is it the best movie ever? No. But it is darn fun. It knows that it's just there to entertain you, and it is super entertaining. It pulls off this character with aplomb. It pulls off some cool villains. It's got a great cast. By the way, what a time to be alive, fellas. We are in a full-on – I don't know if you're aware of this. We are in a full-on Dolphisance right now. I mean, it is – we are in the middle of Dolphisance. And
wouldn't Lundrenaissance be a better
– No.
Lundrenaissance? Because it's like the AI sound. Lundrenaissance? Okay.
All right.
Dolph Lundgren.
Either way, I'm so pleased that he's back in popular culture. But yeah, great, fun cast, fun movie. I thoroughly recommend it. It has some clunky dialogue, but I didn't really even care because I was just having such a good time with these characters, hanging out with these characters, doing cool action in a visually intense, awesome, big screen popcorn entertainment movie. I loved it.
All right, Devinder Hardwar, I want to hear what you have to say about Aquaman.
Oh, man. So strange to say, I think I'm right there with you, Jeff. This movie, going into it, I had so little hope for anything, really, right? I don't care about Aquaman. I think the DC universe has been, mostly not great, aside from Wonder Woman. There's so many downsides. The one spark of hope I had was James Wan. You know, because this is a guy I've been following since the first Saw. I've loved all his movies, loved the Conjuring movies, too. Even Fury 7, I think there's this guy, you know, raised a franchise that was already pretty insane and like started throwing cars through skyscrapers, you know, and dropping cars out of airplanes. Like he just has big, crazy ideas. So I thought maybe he could have fun with this. And to my delight, he has a ton of fun with this. You know, this is a movie where the script is pretty bad, but I think James Wan embraces what this movie actually is. And it feels, I say this quite a bit, maybe because this is when I grew up, but it feels like a throwback 80s fantasy movie in a way, except with better special effects. It's just kind of a fun ride. Visually inventive, like you were saying, Jeff, like the way fights are handled in this movie, the camera work is just really fun. I don't think you'll see another movie where Nicole Kidman is kind of kicking ass with the trident. I don't think you'll see another movie where Willem Dafoe is effectively the Yoda of this universe, you know, as a martial arts master. Like, there's just
Miyagi.
Crazy things. Yeah, the Miyagi. There's just crazy things happening here. And I think it's always fun. It always has great energy to it. The action is great. It looks fantastic. I think back to a lot of the Marvel movies, especially like early on. The first Thor is a movie I always wanted to be kind of epic. I always wanted to feel big. And at the end of the day, we were stuck in a desert town and then on sound stages. Whereas here, it feels like James Wan is fully embracing the scope that's possible with today's special effects and the scope that you can kind of cover in fantasy and science fiction movies. Yeah, there's a point where there's a group of people riding up on giant seahorses against a group of people riding up on, you know, sharks. And it's a huge, you know, huge shot, a ton of people, a huge world around them. And I am just totally here for it. It's a movie that, yeah, tonally, it is kind of all over the place, but I think the tone itself is very, like, campy fantasy science fiction movie, and that's the stuff I grew up with. I think I kind of enjoy the tone here. Momoa is fantastic. I was really surprised that I didn't realize Patrick Wilson was going to be the big bad, and he's here. I think just, I love him as an actor, but he's really giving it his all to this sort of, like, a villain with many layers, and a villain, one of those great villains who has a point too, I think. And also, surprisingly
I love
enough,
how like, he, sorry, just real quick. I love how he basically looks like the classic version of Aquaman.
Yeah, I was going to say that next. Like, it's he looks like the Aquaman you expected. And so we got Jason Momoa, who's like, who's fun. Like his, I still think Game of Thrones has been the highlight of his career, and we've kind of wanted him to be good because we liked him so much there. But I think he's great. And just giving that extra aspect to of like Pacific Islanderness to that character, bringing on Temuera Morrison, who we'll remember from the Star Wars prequels as Jango Fett, bringing him in, like he just has a great role. Yeah, the script is probably the weakest part of this movie, but I think overall, if you can embrace the campiness and the silliness and like what this movie is doing, it's a lot of fun.
The script is weak, but not quite as weak as some of the wigs.
Oh, the wigs.
Yeah, well, hold on, let's get into that in a bit. But this movie has made over $300 million worldwide already. And that's before I even really start to factor in U.S. grosses. I think it's going to be a huge hit this weekend. Yeah. You know, it's not, the numbers haven't come in yet, but it's very promising. A lot of film critics I respect have said this movie is a lot of fun, Present Company included.
Yeah.
Let
me predict, by the way, that this is the movie that breaks David Chen.
And here's what I'm going to say. You have all these forces. You have this box office, amazing performance. You have all these critics. It's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, barely. And all these people are telling you that Aquaman is good. What I would like to postulate is, what if it's not? What if this is, in fact, a terrible film?
Well, I think it's more like, what if I can't enjoy it?
What if everyone,
a deep, dark hole in my heart?
Exactly. That it is, can't be filled with, you know, CG and red wigs.
What if everyone, no amount
of moisture can provide any solace to my dry, withered heart.
What if everyone is laboring under the illusion that this movie is good or enjoyable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the question.
We all got together and we just decided to do that.
I mean,
enjoy the thing in front of us. Yes,
mass delusion is a largely documented phenomenon. The Berenstain Bears, you know, phenomenon.
Sinbad's in this movie.
The Sinbad Kazam movie. You know, like these are widely documented events that have occurred. Chemtrails in the air. You know, that's another thing that happens. And also
good.
People like Aquaman, right? Like this, all those things are just comparable. What I just said, right? What if this movie's bad? So I saw this movie at a press screening. And after the screening, the publicists always ask the critics like what they think of the movie. And I believe they send the reactions to the studio, so they have a heads up on what's coming. I don't actually know what they do with that information. But somebody asked me, "What did you think of the movie?" And I said, "I thought it was terrible." And on the way out, I bump into Matt Lynch, who's a film critic in Seattle area, and I said, "So Matt, what did you think of the movie?" And he's like, "Oh, I loved it." He said, "What did you think?" I said, I really did not like it at all. And he's like, he says, "It has an octopus playing drums. What more do you want?"
Yes.
Yeah,
Dave.
Fair point.
It fully embraces its insanity.
It has an octopus playing drums. In Matt Zoller Seitz's review of this film for RogerEbert.com, he says, quote, "Whenever anybody asks me what Aquaman is like, I mention an early scene where opposing Atlantean forces square off and debate the kingdom's future. One side rides armored seahorses that whinny. The other rides armored sharks that roar.
Yeah.
Aquaman is as concerned with scientific accuracy as SpongeBob SquarePants, and that's one of the many reasons why I like it." End quote.
Baby. Underwater explosions? What more do you want?
That scene really does kind of encapsulate a lot of what the tone of this movie is.
Well, I think it's more like, it presents to you that scene, and you're like, are you with it? or are you not? That's your deciding moment. If you're not with it, then the entire movie falls apart, right?
Here's what I'm going to say about this movie to its credit, okay? To its credit, I think that this movie is much closer to the kind of movies we want a major studio like Warner Brothers to be making. You know, it's fun. You know, it doesn't take itself too seriously. It has a positive and hopeful message, right? Which, when you go back,
Aquaman
and
does heroic things and actually helps people.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go back and look at those Batman v Superman and Man of Steel movies, it's just like it's not as hopeful as this mm-hmm. movie is, right? It's not as positive.
It's like they took the wrong lessons from the Nolan movies. I think that's right. What it was.
Yes,
right,
sure.
Right. That's correct. That's exactly, that's a great point. And I think that this movie is definitely a step in the right direction when it comes to making an enjoyable superhero film. Here's another thing this movie does well. You know, actually, come to think of it, the things that I'm crediting this movie for are things that it doesn't do, right? Here's another thing it doesn't do. It basically doesn't tie into any of the other DC movies at all, right?
Sure.
Like, there's no protracted scene where Aquaman's sitting in front of a laptop clicking on, like, icons of security footage from, like, other characters in the DCEU, right? Like, right. He doesn't, like, chill out with Flash at any point in the, you know? And
I would love to see that.
And
yeah.
That's something that the DC movies have struggled with, which is you have to make one good movie before you can build a universe out of them, mm-hmm. right? You got to make one good movie before you can start to figure out all the connections between the other movies. And at least this movie tried to do that, right? Mm-hmm. It tried to make one good movie.
Yeah, I think, by the way, it shows like how inverted or how backwards the whole DC movie universe thing happened, was because they wanted all these characters and they wanted Justice League to happen, but they couldn't really wait for this, you know, and even Wonder Woman like took a while. So,
I mean, imagine how different Justice League would have been if this movie and Wonder Woman had come out first. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, I think. Did Wonder Woman come up before Justice League? Yeah, it did. It did come up before Justice League. But
it's like it didn't matter, really.
It didn't matter. At that point, the credibility was already all destroyed. I think that the universe building needs to happen slowly and deliberately, and they definitely told a discrete story. Even though it is an origin story, even though it has many of the tropes that we've seen in origin stories, like, it was a discrete story. They didn't get ahead of themselves. For that, I give them credit.
The other thing they do that I think DC in particular needs to realize or should have realized earlier, and I think Wonder Woman kind of gets this and Aquaman definitely gets it, is that there's a difference between the DC heroes and the Marvel heroes. And that difference is that the DC heroes are almost universally gods.
Yeah.
They're gods.
Yeah. And about destiny and you taking your rightful place as the one, right?
Right. The types of stories that they tell. Like, Man of Steel wanted to be some weird thing that just isn't Superman. And these stories, like the idea of Wonder Woman, the idea of Aquaman being these godly beings and understanding where they're better than human beings, you know, that they're the best of us, that they're it's mythology is what it really is. And the Marvel films, I mean, other than Thor, aren't that. They aren't mythology. They're sort of average people who are thrust there. You know, they're with great power comes great responsibility. And DC heroes are mythological creatures coming to terms with their place, right? It is trying to be a beacon of hope for humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Aquaman's about. It's about this character becoming a hero. And
he's
being
a lighthouse.
Scenes. Yes. That's great. Yes. So I love the fact that they finally came around to realizing that about these heroes. And I think that's why these two movies in particular work best for me.
Another thing to the film's credit is I do think it succeeds in establishing Jason Momoa as, or, you know, this version of Aquaman as generally a cool figure, like a badass figure who can get stuff done. I always kind of laughed at the idea of Aquaman as well. Entourage did a parody Aquaman movie directed by James Cameron, and mm-hmm. it's easy to forget that the joke behind that was that it was stupid Like it was laughable, the concept that someone could make a tentpole Aquaman movie, right?
Or would want to. Yeah.
Or would want to, yeah. Like yeah. That was considered so dumb that it was a laugh line in
This is coming off of like the insane excess of like comic book movies of the 90s too. Like that's how dumb it was.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That even compared to those movies, it was considered ridiculous. And this movie definitely, you know, this is not an Aquaman you want to mess with, I would say, right? So those are all things that I think the movie did pretty well. You know, you guys have talked about the visual style and the inventiveness of the world, and I'll say it's a style. You know, I'll say it's definitely a singular vision. You know, it doesn't feel like a patchwork of any kind. It does feel like, hey, this was James Wan's version of mm-hmm. what this world would look like. And I would say it's an acquired taste. You know, I found it to be very gaudy and chintzy looking and did not appreciate the visuals of the movie that much. They're very loud.
The armor was cool. You didn't think that? I thought all the armor looks were so neat.
I don't know, dude. You know, at one point, Patrick Wilson puts on this thing at near the end of the movie. He puts on this piece of armor that makes him look really silly. Like it makes him look. It looks like the Halloween costume version of what that costume is supposed to be. And I just think a lot of it looks silly, and maybe that's what it, you know, like that is what the movie is supposed to be. It's supposed to be super silly. You're not supposed to take it seriously at all. And for me, it just pushed me too far in that direction. I thought the child acting was uniformly terrible throughout the film, and the wigs were unnecessarily bad. I was watching the commentary for the movie Gone Girl, directed by David Fincher. And one of the first things that he talks about in that commentary is that wig technology has basically not advanced in like 80 years. And that was the line I thought of when I was watching this movie.
This movie definitely embraces the fact that every wig looks terrible, so let's just have fun with this one terrible wig for Mira and
It didn't need to be terrible. Like, you could have not done that. And it's still, you know, it just reminds me that I'm watching what, in my opinion, is a bad film. But if you throw all notion of decency and quality out the window...
I mean, no love for the action,
and
Dave,
embrace
like,
the camp.
On.
And embrace the camp. This could be an enjoyable film, but I just found it to be an assault on my senses that made me question the nature of my reality. Dude, after watching everyone say it's a good movie.
You have expressed fondness for God of Egypt.
Yeah.
And you can't find any joy in this movie?
Dave, we in our Kick-Ass 2 review, I remember you really liked that movie. You know, it seems like this,
okay.
At least on a level of camp, like, that's what it is. Like, the action, there's some good stuff here. Like that opening
really good
big sequence, with Nicole Kidman. Like, after certain points, the characters do look like, you know, video game models, basically. But I think the camera work's really inventive. There's a big scene across Sicily where
so
people are like jumping on rooftops, and the camera goes back to follow one fight and comes back forward. Like, it's really inventive in a way that honestly we don't even really see in superheroes, movies anymore.
Yeah, you know, that's all kind of true. And also, Jeff, you know, Gods of Egypt, I'm just going to say it's possible I might have been lying about all that stuff. Just going to put it out there that maybe I was wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I was wrong.
Maybe.
I mean, at least you've come to that realization.
I think my favorite part about this movie, by the way, is that I can, at least because I'm somebody who enjoys campy fantasy movies in a way, like, I can enjoy this movie unironically. I can enjoy it for what it is. Whereas something like Gods of Egypt, it kind of feels like sometimes we were forced to like look at how bad it is, look at how batshit it is, and I'm enjoying it on that level. I just don't like enjoying things like that. I want to actually enjoy it, and I genuinely enjoyed this one.
All right, fellas. There's a lot to talk about in spoilers. Shall we get to it?
Yeah.
You guys loved it. I didn't like it. You guys match the opinion of Literally most of the world. China seems to love
it. It's barely fresh in Rotten Tomatoes, but I think, yeah, this is a very audience-pleasing movie.
Agreed, agreed. All right, well, let's move into spoilers for Aquaman starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course...
You're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
Now, I'm surprised, Dave, you were bringing up silly costumes. You did not bring up or talk about what was happening with Manta, which is definitely of the week script. Like,
what
the biggest
the heck
casualty
was that? First of all,
justified it, baby. Yeah. It's got to be bigger.
They justify it. They gave us a montage as he was developing that costume too. It's like, I got to go bigger. Clearly, it does not fit.
One of the craziest montages I've ever seen in a movie.
It was amazing.
Depeche Mode, I think it was, right?
It was Depeche Mode. Yeah.
The music, yeah. Music across the board in this movie is fantastic. I loved it. The synth
except,
score. Is
except
so good.
There is a Pitbull song. And it is a Pitbull rendition of Africa.
There is
and,
a Pitbull
yeah.
rendition of Africa
I
that I think
the
made me lose
moment.
My faith
yeah.
in humanity, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So that did happen.
Isn't it weird that basically Black Mantis has what is
Black Manta.
Traditionally...
Manta.
What'd I say, Mantis?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm very sick. Black Manta has what is traditionally the hero origin story.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
he... Very sympathetic hero origin story that
told in the worst way possible, by the way. Like, just like,
yeah.
hey, son, let's go do crime together. Oh no, you killed my father for doing crime. I will hate you forever.
Well, also that moment when men. So, I mean, I'm not going to read the plot summary, but maybe we could go like through like the process of the movie. Right at the beginning of the movie. Black Manta goes in, he's doing crime together. His dad's like, hey, son, you finally earned this dagger. And I knew the moment he presented that dagger, that dad was dead. Right? Like,
why are you doing this in the middle of a mission?
Yeah,
you can like, get me quickly.
It's just
my
like,
favorite
it's so,
part.
Time is so compressed.
My favorite
compressed.
Part is, I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
It's, no, I was just like, time is so compressed, right? That,
yeah,
that
yeah.
he needs to do the emotional father son moment during the mission. Like, they don't have time to set that up before.
It's right? the whole setup. It's like, you're my son. Also, here's this thing. Also, they used to call me Manta. Do something with that.
Yeah.
My favorite part about him saying they used to call me Manta is that they literally arrived in a Manta shaped submarine, and his son is like, oh, it all makes sense now.
And then
I was wondering why we spent so much time worrying about the look of our submarine, Dad. And now, man, that God, I really wish you'd told me this earlier because I just thought that was some weird affectation.
And then Arthur Curry pulls a Batman Begins where he's like, I don't need to, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't need to save you kind of thing. Then yeah. I just thought it was hilarious. That later in the film, he's having this conversation with Amber Heard's character, and she's like, "Oh, thanks so much for saving me." And he says, "Well, it's only because of me that you're really in danger." And she's like, "What are you talking about? Don't be silly." And he's like, "Well, I kind of killed that guy's dad." And she's like, "No, you didn't." And he's like, "No, I really did.
I really kind of did.
It would have been." So trivial of me to save him. I mean, literally, it would have taken 3 seconds tops.
And I could have prevented
this
all this terrible
like
stuff from
like
happening.
A dozen people. Yeah, so I don't know. It's weird sympathy for that character.
I just don't understand. Like, that, just that scene alone in any other movie would break this movie into movie jail, guys. I just don't. That would be screenwriter jail right there.
The movie starts with screenwriter jail, right? The whole love story thing. The final line between Nicole Kidman and Tamara Morrison at the beginning where she's like, in the ocean, our tears just wash away. And what is this?
He says, here we feel them.
Here we can feel them. That's right. That's right.
And that's when I knew I would love this movie. Yeah.
But I also love how they basically rip off How to Train Your Dragon 2's mother
uh-huh.
arc.
Uh-huh.
Like, exactly. But it's all fun, man. It's fun. Nicole Kidman being Nicole Kidman.
I think Tamara Morrison is a very talented actor, right? But it just felt like completely implausible to me that, you know, supermodel from the ocean would drop into this lighthouse and kind of fall in love.
Listen, Dave. Listen,
Splash.
There is hope for all of us. Yeah,
it's Splash. It's basically Splash.
Just the visual of them two together. Splash. It just looked ridiculous. It looked ridiculous. It just doesn't. Anyway, okay, but
she fell for him because of his luscious head of hair.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. Which was then gone in the later scenes. But I'll say this to the movie's credit is that it does understand kind of basic screenwriting structure of how to set up and then pay off. Like, hey, every day he goes to the dock, and then like 2 hours later, after a massive underwater battle, I'm like, when are they going to get back to that dock thing? And it does end with that scene. So I was like, okay, yep, you paid that off, movie. Nice job. I do think the moment when Nicole Kidman kicks everyone's ass in one long continuous shot is pretty cool. You know,
so cool.
You don't get to see Nicole Kidman kicking ass that often in movies, and then she does it in a really visually dynamic way in this movie with kind of like a virtual camera that, you know, spins around and captures every.
The camera's
death.
So much fun, and it does that through, I think, all of the action scenes too, because it's a lot of them are underwater, and it feels like it's free floating in a way. I don't know, that feels different than on land.
There's, DaVinci already brought up the rooftop scene in Sicily, which I just thought was such a blast to watch. And the other underwater thing where they're on the boat and they get attacked by all those creatures for some reason, and then he does the flare and goes underwater and they're all after him.
I will say that is genuinely beautiful. Like,
amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
You're talking about how these characters are gods, Jeff. I mean, that's like a Michelangelo painting that someone would have made, you know, is like all those creatures rushing after this guy with the flare. I saw that visual from the trailer and I said, this trailer is god awful. Like, I hate everything about this trailer, but I would be interested to see this movie just for that one visual of him diving down with the flare. Right.
Yeah.
And it definitely was worth it. So,
yeah. And another thing we haven't really brought up, this movie is not afraid to really riff on Arthurian legend, basically, because his name's Arthur Curry.
Yeah.
He pulls a trident from the stone, you know, the whole thing. Like, it's very much that. And this is probably the best King Arthur riff we've had since Men in Tights.
Yeah, and we're kind of inside an Indiana Jones movie for a little bit.
Men in Tights was Robin Hood.
Oh, sorry, Robin Hood. What am I?
I think you're referring
to
Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, which is also a great rendition.
I'm definitely not doing that.
Yeah.
But we like take a sidetrack into an Indiana Jones movie for a little while, and that's super fun. And I mean, this movie's just having a blast. It's all the money is on the screen. Like, it's throwing money around. It's like big and bombastic and crazy. I mean, the whole idea that the movie's like, we got to go to Sicily. I'm like, what? Aquaman needs to go to Sicily? Okay.
You know what I thought was interesting was that there was a couple of moments when James Wan's horror film pedigree came into the picture, and it happened during that Sicily section because what you have it's interesting because you have these aqua people who some of them can't breathe air, right? They're not amphibious, and so they need to come to land via these suits that have all this water in them. Right? So their faces are covered with water, right?
Basically spacesuits, yeah.
Yeah, they're basically spacesuits, but with water in them. And there's a moment in that Sicily scene when, I don't remember if it's Mira or Aquaman, like, breaks the face of one of those suits and like, cuts off one of their arms. And the guy just starts, like, choking on air. And it's, like, one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen is this, like, human-looking guy choking, breathing air. And then it just cuts away, and you never find out what happens to that guy.
That's not the one where he sticks his head into the toilet.
No, different guy. Different guy.
Different guy.
Yeah.
But by the way, that guy is what's his name from that show. I'm very sick.
I don't know what's going on right now.
It's okay. There are a lot of
Barry,
like, great actors
from Barry. Betty.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's the guy. The dude from Barry. The best character from Barry.
Oh yeah.
What's that guy's name?
Hank? Noho Hank?
Yeah. Noho.
Was that him? Oh,
yeah,
man.
It was. It was totally him.
Anthony Carrigan? Is that Anthony Carrigan?
Yeah. He was great. He had a little teeny bit part, but I was like, I recognize you under all your amphibious makeup.
Yeah.
The toilet guy.
Toilet guy.
Oh, man. He really has been humiliated on screen a lot
this year. He's not showing up in the credits, Jeff.
That's him.
in IMDb.
I'm oh, really? I'm going off my gut. I think that was him.
Okay. I don't see him in there.
Looks like him.
let me check his IMDb page. But
well, one thing I can mention, by the way, speaking of James Wan's horror pedigree, there are a lot of like surprise explosions, yeah, I think, in this movie. Maybe too many. Maybe like stop at like three, because after a point, it seems like almost every scene transition between like a calm scene to action scene had to happen because of a surprise explosion. So, you know, that's one thing. One big downside to this movie.
Hey, Jeff, Anthony Carrigan's definitely not in Aquaman. So
if you believe IMDb, what do you believe? IMDb or me thinking that's true?
Let's
believe.
I think you just kind of actually insulted Anthony Carrigan by thinking he was in the movie.
He was a huge
ugly sea creature that stuck his head in the toilet.
Oh, I realized he was under a lot of digital makeup, but
you keep talking like it's actually him in the movie.
I was very excited to see him in this movie. I'm a big fan of him.
I agree.
Just so glad he got some work in this movie, which he's definitely in.
Okay.
In your fan edit, that's him. That's him.
in your headcanon, it's Anthony Carrigan in the movie. Okay, so let's see. Anything else we want to talk about? There's this article over at Vulture by Nate Jones. And I'm going to just read the first few sentences here. He says, "This December, Julie Andrews makes one of her periodic returns to the cinema in a colorful studio sequel that features magical adventures, memorable musical choices, and a scene where a woman descends from the sky. I'm talking, of course, about Aquaman, in which Andrews voices the pivotal role of Carathan, a tentacled creature who guards a watery MacGuffin that our hero must obtain if he wants to become master of his damp domain. Without getting into spoilers, the Carathan has three main character traits. She's very big, she's very old, and she absolutely hates that Aquaman is not a full-blooded Atlantean. Yes, that's right. Julie Andrews chose to voice a racist sea monster in Aquaman instead of making a cameo in Mary Poppins Returns."
Oh, spoiler for that, though. But yeah. Spoiler. Yeah,
she's basically the lady in the lake in this, except as a giant sea monster, and I'm here for it.
And
I'm
she's
totally
racist
down with
too. Don't forget that she's racist.
Totally racist.
Yeah,
but she learns to be less racist by the end of that sequence.
Yeah, because
he's the chosen one.
Because he can talk to her for some reason, right? Like,
yeah. She usually gives a monologue, and no one understands what she's saying.
Yeah, like, how does that version, you know, like, Nicole Kidman didn't say, "Hey, I've tried to get this thing a bunch of times, but every time I try, this huge sea creature just barks a lot of nonsense at me." You know, like,
I just like the fact that she's game to try every time. She explains what's going on and just assumes that they don't understand what she's saying, but she's always going to say it. And then this is the first time the guy's like, yeah, I get that. And she's like, what?
She's just repeating the monologue every time it pertains to you. Also, you know, Nicole Kidman, I'm just going to say again, in my continuing complimenting of her looks, did not look like she had endured 20 years in this, like, netherworld.
It was just her hair.
Completely alone.
Does
yeah,
it
I mean,
look
yeah.
like she's endured 20 years in our netherworld? Because she has. She was married to Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's right.
She looks as young as she did then. So, you know, it tracks.
It's true. I watched I watched English Patient recently. Don't ask why. And there was a trailer for Cold Mountain in it. And I swear to God, Nicole Kidman looks exactly the same in that movie, which was made 15 years ago, than she does today. It's pretty incredible. But other than the terrible wig, my mind is just struggling to grasp that this woman has been lost in this. Like, what has she been doing for 20 years? If
she's
you were
been making
alone...
that badass armor from like the scraps of other people who've died, basically,
it is badass armor.
It's just you would kind of go insane, you know, like your mind would be a different, like, look at Castaway. That guy was gone for like however many years.
I mean, it's not nearly as bad as Michelle Pfeiffer in Ant-Man.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Like, she had way longer hang out in a way.
She was
less
in a much weirder place too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess, you know, both of these people would have gone insane, but I guess it's a testament to their fortitude that they were able to survive with their minds intact. Anyway,
I mean, that the whole mom is okay and has been surviving on her own as a cool warrior trope is, I'm realizing, has been pretty big in the last couple of years.
Well, yeah. It's not only that, but I think it usually accompanies the trope of we must do what we can to let this man be the best man that he can be, right? Which is it's been played out at this point, right? That it's, yeah. it's usually mom is warrior trope, and then comes back, and then even though she is far more capable and willing, far more talented, it's the dude that we have to like get behind, you know.
She's an actual queen, yeah.
Yeah, she's an actual queen, but no, it's really Aquaman's journey we're here to support. That does get kind of tired after a while. What did you guys think of the huge final CG vomiting sequence with all the sea creatures?
Not to editorialize, Dave,
I'm not trying to bias you in any way. What did you think of that sequence there?
It's insane.
Here's my question:
huge.
Like, don't we usually not like it when there's hordes of CG bad guys, faceless CG bad guys, facing off against other hordes of CG faceless bad guys?
It depends on how it's done, right?
Yes.
Like, I think that's the main thing. And at that point, this movie becomes Lord of the Rings underwater. Like, you know, I think tonally, like, given everything James Wan is going for here, like, you know the stakes. You know what's up. You know this is, like, a fake war being created by Patrick Wilson's character to try to, like, consolidate power to attack the surface. And all you know is, like, okay, these two sides are fighting. I wish we had been introduced to those other weird-looking, the merchant tribe or something like that, the fisherman tribe. I wish we got a little more of, like, who this other kingdom was. But at the end of the day, you're just waiting until Aquaman appears to save them all.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of felt like that's not how I anticipated this movie ending. You know, I didn't think we were going to move into an entire war, but I thought it was kind of rad because the whole threat throughout the entire film is that they're going to attack the surface world. So I assumed there would be some sort of stopping them in the middle of attacking the surface world. And we don't even get there yet. Mm-hmm. But I was down for it, man. It's crazy. I didn't love the big CGI war in Wakanda in Avengers Infinity
right.
War.
Yeah.
In conceptually, but like DaVinci was saying, it's all about execution.
And what aspects do you think brought this execution to the next level? Do you think it's how over the top it was or how colorful it was? I think both of those things
contributed to it. It's super fun, but I also was never in the dark about what was happening. Like it was clearly choreographed. It was clearly executed in the sense that I had a sense of where everyone was, what was going on. And dude, that shot of them kissing as the war is happening all around them. So bad at, like, I'm just down for the pure spectacle of what's mm-hmm. going on. And there's clarity in the middle of that, right? That we have this cool character moment as that's all happening. I know, who is who and where everybody is and what they want.
The thing I couldn't get out of my mind, you know, this sums up a lot of my reaction to the movie is people are dying in those explosions in the background. You know, Aquaman, get back to work, dude. Like, people freaking dying left and right.
This is what Dave is thinking during every single, like, action movie and superhero movie and everything. Just like, okay, enough,
like,
enough
stop
with
making out. Stop making
enough
out. Your people are dying. You know, you got to. Every one of those explosions looks cool, but it represents another Aqua soldier who's never going home to his kids. So,
you know, they're adult Aqua people, and they made their choices. That's how it
goes. They made their Aqua choices.
They made their water choices, yes. I think ultimately that scene, and like I think a reason why I just enjoyed this movie overall, it really shows that, you know, giving directors a chance, especially directors who've been proven to be successful in other franchises and in their own work, but giving directors who don't normally get the chance to direct comic book movies, you know, the opportunity to do something like this gets really interesting results. Rather than another Zack Snyder movie, we get, I think, a really interesting, big, epic fantasy movie that nobody expected to be this fun. Similarly with Patty Jenkins and Wonder Woman. Like, you know, she took chances, and it's a very different looking and feeling movie than anything else in the DC universe. So I just hope they keep up with that, and kudos to James Wan.
Yeah,
something that
seconded.
And let me just say also, despite my negative things about the film, I think James Wan is still an insanely talented director, and I continue to support his work. This is just not my favorite piece of his work. But yeah. So a few other things to mention. There's just a couple, like, do you guys have any, like, favorite moments from the
movie?
I'll
tell you this. I am straight up pissed that they spoiled the gold costume reveal the advertising.
Yeah.
Just the fact there's a poster with him wearing it, because that moment could have landed like a wallop. It could have been so rad to finally see him emerge in the classic Aquaman costume. And the costume looks cool. It's really well done. And yet they totally spoil it in the advertising of the movie. It's just such a shame.
Earlier I was talking about James Wan's penchant for horror movies. And there is this moment at the end of the Sicily sequence where Black Manta gets flung off the side of a cliff.
And you're like in his face.
There's like a GoPro shot, like basically where you're strapped in, and you see his like head get caved in, basically. Like, and you think to yourself, man, there's no way anyone could survive that. Right, that was my reaction. Was
certainly not a regular human who's not a god.
Yeah, they showed you that to reinforce that character is dead, right?
Except not.
But then, did you guys stay through the mid-credit sequence?
Yeah,
yeah.
So you find out Black Manta's alive, and he's like, "I want to kill that Aquaman guy," which I thought was kind of anticlimactic because we already knew that Black Manta
wanted. Have you learned anything?
Yeah,
from
like
this?
We already knew that he wanted to kill Aquaman, so I guess the reveal was just that Black Manta was still alive.
Sure. Randall Park around?
Randall
for some
Park,
reason.
Baby.
Yeah.
Really. Really hamming it up in this movie, I have to say.
He knows what movies he's in.
Yeah, that's true.
Dave, do you know what movie you're watching?
He knows what movies he's in more probably than I know what movie I'm watching.
That's true. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know the DCU as well as I know the Marvel U, so I don't know if maybe he is a character reference that I'm supposed to get, but it seems like he might be set up for becoming some character that, is important.
Did you guys stay to the end of the credits?
No, is there another scene?
I was told no. Like we actually, I saw it with a friend.
I heard no. Yeah,
I heard
it.
I saw it with a friend, and we looked it up, and he said according to this, Stinger website, there's no scene at the end. I was just like, I'm getting the F out of here because I've been here for 2.5 hours.
I don't want to move past that Sicily scene too quickly though, I love that Black Manta death moment. It's insane, but there are so many moments in that sequence that are insane. I love. Her using the wine as a weapon is so cool. the scene that we've seen a million times from the Bourne movies through Mission Impossible movies, the rooftop chase jump where we're underneath the character who leaps from building to building. We do that here, but we've got a second character going through the walls at the same time. So fun,
that
so
was fun.
Cool.
I just love the moment in that fight, too, when you're following the Aquaman fight and then the camera just goes back and back and back and then you're following the Mira fight. Like, it's just there's the visuals. There's just so much going on here, man. Like, as an action set piece, I think that's one of my favorite of the year.
Yeah, I agree.
It was pretty good. It's definitely my favorite scene in the whole movie. So I'll give you guys that. It's pretty good. Anything else you want to mention? There's a moment when Patrick Wilson straps on that incredibly silly mask and says, "Call me Ocean Master," which I felt really summed up how silly the entire film was, right? I guess the movie, I mean, it really is just trying to be really silly, and I think it does succeed at that. But I just don't, like, how seriously do we take this movie? Like, not at all.
I mean,
right?
Ocean Master is a character from the comic, and he looks like that. So it's doing the mask from the comic book that is, I think that's what it's doing. Yeah. It's doing that character.
I do think, like, that's the moment, like, that term, like, fully embracing that costume and everything. Like, 10 years ago, maybe we wouldn't have done that in a superhero movie, especially if everyone's trying to be, like, super dark and super moody like the Nolan movies, whereas this is different. I think in a way, and embracing the camp works sometimes and definitely worked for me in this one.
Yeah, there definitely is. If you enjoy camp, I think this is a movie between the wigs. And I also think, like, Jason Momoa is a talented actor, but his style of acting is very different than the other people in the film, And between
I think
that,
he has talent. I'm not sure if he's always the best actor, but he's very good for this
role. He has
role,
a lot
right?
of personality, right? Like,
yes.
That's the thing, is that personality can get you really far in the entertainment industry, and I think he has a lot of personality, and
it's charm too.
Yeah, it's charm, it's personality. Charming. No denying that from me. That But that said, I mean, I do think like the acting style really, you're watching like a surfer dude, you know,
surfer bro,
act alongside like Patrick Wilson. It's just a really weird, right? It's just
this is a movie that also presents Patrick Wilson as the younger brother to Jason Momoa, which is
Kind of funny.
They're not that far apart in age, but definitely, you know, Patrick Wilson's been around long enough that we see him as an older guy. Typically.
I'd love to know what's the age difference between Patrick Wilson and Nicole Kidman, because I bet it isn't a lot.
Well, Nicole,
she's a supernatural being, right? So yeah, whatever. True. She's eternal.
Well, Nicole Kidman is 12 years older than Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is 39. Nicole Kidman's 51.
Patrick Wilson's got to be in his 40s, right?
Yeah.
Right. And she doesn't look like that much old. Like, I think she's supposed to be way older than 51 in the scenes where they find her under, you know, at the center of the earth or wherever the hell they are. But she really does not look.
She plays both younger and older than herself. She never plays her own age. She plays both younger and older than herself, right?
Yeah, but she just looks like really young. Even the old, it's basically like they just slapped an old wig on Nicole Kidman and expect you to, you know, believe that, you know, this is Nicole Kidman when she's like 65 or something. It just
I love that they literally did the digital age reduction on you know, several people in the movie, but they didn't do it on Nicole Kidman because you don't need
the software. Just doesn't work. Why? Nothing's happening.
You know, well, we don't know that. They probably did something, right? We don't know. We don't know.
Also, you know, we get the Mr. Miyagi moment of, you know, here's the special move you're gonna need. I'll teach it to you later. Here's the crane kick. You know, it's maybe the lamest special move. Like,
you twirl it really fast.
You spin it around really fast, and then you just wait for them to come at you. You just wait.
We'll see. It brings them in. It's so it invites them to attack you.
They're going to have to do something eventually. Just keep spinning.
I'm going to keep swinging my arms this way. If you get hit, it's your own
fault. It's your own fault. Why are you hitting yourself?
I will say that one aspect of that ending sequence I really liked is, it is really visual spectacular when Leviathan Julie Andrews is just absorbing 50,000 missiles shot out of shark launchers, which, by the way, is like an insane sentence. I know I just said.
Saying that aloud. It's like, I want to see that movie, Leviathan Julie Andrews. Yes, sign me up.
It was like kind of breathtaking to see her just kind of going up against all these whatever. I don't even remember what kind of sea creatures they were, but they were launching all kinds of shit at her. And that was pretty impressive. So, okay.
Sounds like you like the movie, Dave.
Yeah, it sounds like there are things you kind of enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of things I enjoyed. There's a handful of things I enjoyed about the movie. I'm not gonna lie about that. Any closing thoughts? I think we gotta rank the DCEU movies right now. Okay. And for reference, the DCEU movies will refer to, right, for the purposes of this exercise, in chronological order, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Wonder Woman, Justice League. No, I'm sorry, I missed Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad's in there. Wonder Woman, Justice League, and Aquaman, right? So those six movies. What's our number one movie out of those six movies?
Wonder Woman.
Jeff?
It's actually a good movie.
Yeah,
on multiple levels,
I'm tempted to put Aquaman above Wonder Woman. It's because Wonder Woman is very good, and I loved it. But
it didn't have a terrible script, which is kind of nice.
But the villain was very bad.
Pretty weak third act. Yeah. That last third act is
the villain was very bad. But the love story in Wonder Woman, I would say, is far better than the love story in Aquaman.
Right? I agree with that.
You really kind of, I think, whether you agree with the decision to make Chris Pine's character a central part of that character's life, the movie did a good job of selling it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's to its credit. So, okay, so that's our number one. What are we, like, whatever our number one is, you know, if your number one is Aquaman, then your number two is probably Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah. I those two, I'm having a hard time deciding which one's number one. They're both, I think, pretty darn good.
Okay, so that leaves
my number two would be Aquaman or Aquaman.
Aquaman, right? So that leaves Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League, and Suicide Squad, right?
There's a big gap here, and then I would probably put Justice League next.
Really?
Yeah, it's Jesus. Either that or Man of Steel.
Jesus, I'm in shock that you'd put. In my opinion, Man of Steel, not the greatest movie, but far better than any of those other movies.
Well,
the
it's first, at least trying something, right?
The first act of Man of Steel is very good. I think.
You mean when Kevin Costner says, "Don't save people"?
Yeah, up to that moment, literally, that's the moment where the movie just goes to hell.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a fun kind of first act of Man of Steel. But I think Justice League has characters I'm more having a good time with and some sequences that are pretty, and I mean, it's a bad movie, but,
it has a more fun tone. Yeah.
We're in the realm of bad movies now.
Yeah.
Jeff, why don't you run down the rest of yours? So like,
okay, so here's what I think just barely Aquaman, then Wonder Woman, but those two could switch places. And then Justice League, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, then like a ham sandwich and like a rainy day looking out the window, and then like Suicide Squad.
Are you saying you don't like ham sandwiches and rainy day looking out the window?
No, I'm saying I put just looking at a ham sandwich above Suicide Squad.
Okay, Devendra Hardware, what about you?
Yeah, it's tough. I'd probably go for Man of Steel as number three, too, just in terms of what that movie tried to do. I remember the anticipation for it, so that's all part of the enjoyment for me. Then Justice League, then Batman vs. Superman, and way, 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 way at the bottom is Suicide Squad.
Okay, I'm gonna go a different path, guys, okay? I'm going to say, right, number one is Wonder Woman, number two, Aquaman. Okay, so let me pause there and say, I'm still putting Aquaman as number two, right? So, like, even though I didn't like it, even though I thought it was bad, like, for me, we're already in the realm of bad movies, okay, with number two. But it is up there in the DCEU, okay? Number three, Man of Steel, right, which is also pretty bad, but at least visually has a great, what have you.
There's some good action.
Has a great, look, great good what fight. Have you?
Has a great what have you.
He shouldn't even have the will to fill it.
couldn't even get up my thesaurus for that one, Jeff.
It has a great dot, dot, dot.
Number four, I'm going to put, it's either Suicide Squad or Justice League.
Really? Either?
Really?
And I'm going to say Suicide Squad, and here's why. Suicide Squad is a god-awful movie, but it is a terrible movie that I never wish to revisit. But Will Smith and Margot Robbie, I do think that they do make a good – they have great chemistry. I like them in Focus, which is a movie that not very many people enjoy. I like them in Focus. Like them in Suicide Squad.
You're putting this movie up on it because you liked another movie that had the same actors in it?
I think Will Smith has like a lot of charisma, and he plays despite how terrible his character is in this movie, that charisma still carries over, and that's gonna
the
put
Suicide
that
Suicide Squad is good because Focus was pretty fun. I love it.
And then after that, I'm gonna say Justice League. Now here's the thing, Zack Snyder is never going to, or will never get enough credit for the following, which is that he cast Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa as, you know, Aquaman and Wonder Woman. I mean, that that single that pair of decisions, it was hugely impactful to the DCEU, and as a result has resulted in two at least financially successful movies, and one of them was good, right? So gotta give Zack Snyder credit for that decision to cast those two people.
I mean, his casting across the board is incredible. I mean, Kevin Costner as Pa Kent, Amy Adams as Lois Lane. These are inspired choices, which makes the terribleness of the movie even the more heartbreaking, because you had all the dominoes set up and you just knocked them over wrong.
Yeah, indeed. So Justice League is a really bad attempt at an Avengers movie. It's like Bizarro Avengers if the Avengers was completely unenjoyable, right? Awful, god-awful villain, you know, don't give a crap about any of these people who they're bringing together. The visual style looks like the color palette looks like someone took Zack Snyder's work and added a ton of orange into it for some reason. It's an ugly film. And it just is completely unremarkable as a piece of blockbuster filmmaking. So that's my number 5 out of 6. And then way at the bottom, you're saying a ham sandwich. I would say, you know, getting a paper cut on my face, you know, getting kicked in the groin, getting my getting punched in the nose and my nose broken. And then way down there at number 6, Batman v Superman. For the following reason. Not only is that movie an incoherent mess that's way too long, but I think the thing that is unforgivable about that movie is it ruined those characters for a generation.
Yeah, right? You're right.
That
you're right.
For all the kids growing up today, you know, like when we grew up, we had Christopher Reeve's Superman to grow up with. And that's an inspiring, you know, those movies weren't perfect. Specifically 3 and 4 were pretty rough. But Superman remained an aspirational character, truth, justice in the American way, someone we could look up to, someone we could pretend to be. You know, Jeff, I think some people mocked you when you said this during our review of Batman v Superman, but it stuck with me. Things that you guys say stick with me after the review sometimes. And you were saying something you said during that review was, isn't this a character that kids like to wear on their underoos? That's what you said about Superman. You said, isn't this someone who children like to be, you know, who children like want to look up to and want to play with their action figures and stuff?
Yeah.
Can you imagine showing your kids Batman v Superman and being like, you know, buying them Superman action figure and like play with this? Like, I cannot do that.
I couldn't agree more with you, but I think that damage was already done in Man of Steel.
I mean, I think it was exacerbated much worse. Like, it reached its fruition. You know, it's reached its logical conclusion in Batman v Superman, right?
Yeah.
Man of Steel, like, yes, you know, there was some rough stuff in that movie, but Batman v Superman, I just think, is completely irredeemable.
Superman is a monster that needs to be destroyed and is a yes. terror that needs to be contained.
It's, yeah, and Batman is the, you know, fascistic force that's going to destroy him, you know. Paranoid fascism, right, is what. Yeah, anyway,
Justice League continues that idea. It's crazy that that's the take for, as you said, an entire generation on Superman, is that he is to be feared.
So really disappointing. And
it's still not as bad as Suicide Squad, dude.
Like I was saying, Suicide Squad is barely a movie. That movie is like, it is music cues smashed together with dialogue, and then we cut randomly between different things. Like
and text over the screen to tell you who's who.
Yeah. Who's the one guy who shows up for like 30 seconds?
I don't remember.
The guy, like, this is the guy who can climb walls, right?
Yeah, the guy who can climb walls.
I don't remember what his name is, like Anchor or something like that.
This
is
God. Like,
the guy who can climb walls, and then he shows up and he dies 20 seconds later.
Yeah.
But lest we forget an entire sequence introducing a whole team with names on the screen and telling us who they are, and they play no part in the script at all.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Whereas, by the way, Aquaman kind of does that at one point where they're having that fight, and there's a like scoreboard somewhere in the water liquid display. It's like King Orb, pros, la 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 la, cons, Aquaman, no pros, all cons. But it is like a fun tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, you would see this in something. I don't know, like,
and it was like his his name was the half breed.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say this too, guys. You know, you guys are making good points about Suicide Squad and Aquaman, but I'm gonna say that I'm still gonna go with Batman v Superman. And let me throw a couple of other things into the mix, okay? For why this is the worst movie of the DCEU. Point one, Martha, right? Need more be said? This is one of the worst moments in comic book films ever. I would say ever, like against any Marvel film, any, you know, pre-Marvel film, like the Blade movies, you know, like any Spawn, my go-to for
Catwoman.
Catwoman, right. Like, it is up there with any of – this is up there with the basketball scene in Catwoman, right, in terms of like this is one of the worst, cringiest, most smug, self-satisfied moments in the history of comic book films. Okay, so that's one thing. Here's another thing that Batman v Superman spawned. Hashtag release the Snyder Cut, which in my opinion is indicative of all that is awful with toxic fandom today, right? That it is this idea that, like, A, this thing doesn't exist, right? So, like, people are longing after something that doesn't exist. And then there's this kind of entitlement of, like, we should be able to have this, right? Which is not as bad as some of the reaction to The Last Jedi, but it's like kind of very much trending in that direction. So I rest my case. The defense rests, Your Honor.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue that Batman v Superman is any good whatsoever or should be watched by humans. But Suicide Squad is incoherent. It falls apart on the most basic level. At least Batman v Superman falls apart on a more complicated level, right?
Yeah.
At least it falls apart on a more complicated level.
Batman v Superman also doesn't destroy, like, give us a Joker who's just, like, terrible, basically. Like, it's randomly sexist, too, as a movie, Suicide Squad is. At least Batman v Superman, I think, it doesn't matter what you think about the mythology they laid out in Man of Steel, but I think it at least followed onto that in an interesting way. There was potential there to do something interesting. You know, of course Superman has big fights. Of course it has repercussions with the general public. Like, seeing that cost is kind of interesting, much more than anything in Suicide Squad.
All right, folks. Well, spirited debate. There's no right answer of how to rank these movies.
Sure.
If you are going to write into /filmcast@gmail.com about the Snyder Cut, just delete that email right now.
Just don't.
Because that's what I'm going to do to it when it hits our inbox. So,
What is the next DCU movie?
I think the new Wonder Woman movie is coming out.
The 80s one. Yeah, that should be good.
Yeah.
That should be fun. Mm-hmm. I think we're on an upswing.
We're on a DC, you know, we're on an upswing. Aquaman and Wonder Woman 1984, which is probably going to be pretty good. I mean, that's going to be, I do think that unless they release, like, more of these movies that do very well, the idea of a kind of Justice League reunion is pretty remote right now, right?
Well, I guess we lost our Batman and our Superman actors, right? So that's kind of out anyway.
Yeah,
there is that Batman movie coming from, what's his name, Planet of the Apes guy?
Matt Reeves, yeah,
which I'm excited about it because of him, but yeah, there's no Batman.
There's
that,
a new,
right?
Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie coming out next year, too, I think, right?
Yeah. We don't know what that is. That's a whole thing.
Yeah, so the DCU is not dead.
And we're getting a Suicide Squad 2, right?
I think there probably has to be after the first one made so much money.
Yeah.
So the DCU is not dead by any means, but I think, like, it's definitely happening in a form that it's, if you can call them masterminds, didn't envision, right? They're focusing on just making good individual films now, and I hope they continue to do that. So,
what if we make good movies? New strategy.
Indeed. All right. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the podcast, gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's been a fun podcast. It's been a wild year.
It's been a year.
Mm-hmm. It's been a year. And hopefully everyone listening got through it okay as well. Find more episodes of this podcast at /filmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, Devendra Hardwar, where can we find more of your work on the internet this week?
Now you can find me on Twitter at Devendra, and I also have a tech podcast at nomoretech.net. That's now with a K. And also be doing CES in a couple weeks, too. So I'll be out for that.
Jeff Cannata. Woo-hoo.
I'm on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I do a video game podcast. We're doing our end of the year stuff. The next episode, we'll have our top fives there. So check that out. It's a lot of fun. You can find that at 5by5.tv/DLC.
Find all of my stuff at DaveChen.net. Subscribe to get emails from me at DaveChen.net/letters. Next week, we'll be talking about our top 10 films of 2018. Going to be a lot of fun. We're going to get some honorable mentions in there, some biggest disappointments in there, and other categories that I think you will enjoy. So subscribe to the Slash Filmcast. Stay tuned. You'll hear it all on this feed. Thanks for listening. Have a happy new year. We'll see you next week.